This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is podcast number 170. We're recording this on the 16th of December, so that Henry and I and Paul and others can have a little bit of a break into the new year. And as you can see, if you're on YouTube, there's a couple of guests with us. We have Paul Edenbrow, who you would have seen on the previous podcast. We've got Matthew Gregory, One Teen Matthew, with us. And we've also got Andy, who is at Spenno006 on X with us. Obviously, I've got my brilliant co-host, Henry Viola Hare. You can find him at HC Viola on X. And we've got the fantastic Paul Hall from ShareScope with us once more to talk all things stocks and also to navigate the vast software and data that is the ShareScope platform, the award-winning platform that is ShareScope. What we're going to do in this special brand new year podcast is talk about a couple of stocks and also stocks that each of us on this particular podcast think could be interesting in 2026, that could do well, that could be worthwhile you listeners, wherever you are in the world, researching. And before we do that, I will just say this, and hopefully you've had a fantastic Christmas, because this is the new year pod, so I'm hoping you've had a fantastic Christmas and you've got your portfolio all set up and ready and raring to go in 2026, and that you're happy with the performance of 2025. We're going to start the pod with Paul Hall of ShareScope. We don't get to hear much from him. He's there in the background, analyzing everything, putting everything out so we can see what's happening, showing all the data. But we want to hear a little bit from Paul. What is he about? You know, we found out something offline which can't share with you. You know, he's a bit of a nerd, people. But, you know, software people are, aren't they, normally? Matt's looking at me and chuckling because he is a nerd. Right, Paul, over to you, sir. Paul Hall of ShareScope. Wanted to talk about a couple of stocks. You want to share a little bit about your background before you went to ShareScope? So over to you, mate. You share what you would like, please.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Henry. Thanks for having me on the podcast. A bit about me. I work for ShareScope, the award-winning software for private investors. Provides market analysis functionality, portfolio management tools as well. Prior to working at ShareScope, I had no exposure to markets, to investing. So I've learned a lot while working here. And despite having access to all the data, I wouldn't consider myself an expert when it comes to investing. I'm still finding my way. I'm still very new to this. I think my wife and I just realized that instead of leaving money in the bank every month, you know, we could put a small amount into our stocks and shares ISA. Not everything does well. Some things do, some things don't. But we're very much learning during our investor journey. Two things that come to mind, or two of our investments that come to mind over the last 12 months. First one I'll mention, actually, I'll share screen as well. So we decided to invest in EOS Energy Enterprises. And the reason for this is just wanting to have some portfolio exposure to the AI sector. And they're a little different to other AI stocks. They focus more on the infrastructure side of things. I'll just get the company description on screen. They focus on sort of energy storage, batteries. So this is the infrastructure side of things in terms of the storage that's needed for AI solutions. And one of the reasons we picked this is the target price at the time was $18. And I think when we went in, it was probably around $5 or $6. So we thought, you know, a potentially decent investment opportunity. And this is what I was referring to earlier about having that target price in mind and then not sticking to it. So the target price I had in mind was 18. which it hit, and I didn't sell. I decided just to keep holding and see what happened. And then when it ended up going down to about $14 or $13, you start regretting that decision. But we did eventually get out. There's no point staying in. We didn't think it would go up beyond 18. So a bit of a learning curve there for us. Stick to your plan is basically what we decided. The other one's a bit more interesting, I suppose, for us, because we had long-term exposure to Warner Brothers Discovery. Buying in over time, so over the course of about 2 years, we were buying into Warner Brothers, and we weren't really seeing much growth, so we were often questioning whether this was a good decision. But we sold everything. We sold everything when we saw the company directors were dropping their stocks. That was around $20, which is going by memory. And then I happened to go back in recently, and that was because there was a Netflix bid at $28 to buy Warner Brothers. I think that's actually completed now. But the share price was only 25 at the time, so it seemed like there was potential for some more growth there. And I think I'm still in. I haven't sold out yet, so but that's something I should probably do. Maybe my emotions will kick in and I'll see that price fall again, and I'll learn my lesson the hard way. Time will tell.
Two very diverse stocks there, Paul. Do you want to go back to the EOS Energy one? Because that seemed to have done extremely well. And it's one of those, is that there's this old adage about bamboo as a tree, as a plant, and it just sits underground for 3 or 4 years, nothing happens, and you think there's nothing growing there, it's not going to crop, and then in the fifth and sixth year it just shoots, just takes off like that. And it that seems to just, you know, sitting there on that 3 year chart, you've gone from beginning of or the end of 2022 all the way through to almost the beginning of this year, and it's just in a very, very tight sort of trading range, and then it's just popped a little bit, gone back down again in April, and then it's taken off again. What was the catalyst for that? Do you recall what made it just go whoosh and just take off?
Our understanding, because we did, you know, you look into these things. Our understanding is finding purpose for that infrastructure. So that, you know, they're making an energy storage solution.
Yeah.
But once that's getting put to use with AI companies, needing some infrastructure to facilitate what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
That started to impact the share price, is our understanding.
Okie dokie.
That is absolutely phenomenal, Paul. I mean, the rate of growth on that's just terrific. If you go back to the financials for me a moment, the financials tab.
Let's have a look. Yeah.
And go to the summary screen. The bit that really catches my eye, that's gone up 345% in 2024 and another 173% this year. So that's 500%. That's been a five bagger if you bought that at the end of 23. And this is the sort of business that would totally walk past me for the simple reason that it has no earnings or there's no profit. So it's got, you know, negative return on capital of 85% with a 3 year average of minus 160%. So this thing burning cash. And I have an allergic reaction to this sort of company and sort of go, well, my gosh, you know, they're setting fire to people's capital. They can go do it with someone else's. And yet you've sort of missed the wood for the trees because actually they've done terrifically well for shareholders the last 2 years. How did you come across them as a business? Was there a particular site you were looking at? Because I've never heard of the company before.
It was a really simple stock screen, actually. I just looked at target price, where the price is now, where the target price is expected to go. And that's obviously combined with just wanting that AI exposure within our portfolio in some form or another.
So it was literally Sit down with Shareascope, no preconceptions, just have a look what's on the market and try and filter things out.
Yes, you can filter on things like sector. So, if you already have visibility of your portfolio, which of course we all do, you typically, well, we didn't want to overexpose to stuff we're already in. So we narrowed our focus down on that basis first of all. And then just looked at where the potential growth was. I don't think I necessarily walk away from this thinking that's a surefire method of making, good investment decisions going forward. I think there's certainly an element of luck there, but obviously it's something
If it
that's
was, we'd all be millionaires, wouldn't we? Let's be honest. If it
exactly.
was as simple as just looking at a screen. But yeah, I mean that is phenomenal. And it's one of those companies, Peter and I say this quite a lot on various episodes, but you never hear anyone talking about this. I've never seen anyone on social media. I've seen no coverage, no analyst coverage. If you watch the CNBC over in America, which I think is their sort of main financial news channel that's in the popular eye. I don't even think they've covered it. So they're all going on about Apple, Palantir, Alphabet, the big mega tech stocks. This is one that genuinely seems like a hidden gem to me. So yeah, very well done. Very well done.
Oh, don't worry, Henry. There's lots of losses in my portfolio to balance this out.
That we can talk about those another time. And
Yeah,
the other one
exactly.
you'd got was Warner Brothers, which, again, talking about luck, Warner Brothers strikes me. The first thing when you mentioned it was, geez, you got lucky with that, because that was a business that was really, to my mind, going nowhere fast. Old legacy media company, a shed load of debt, and it's just had a really battered balance sheet, really depressed valuation. Not a lot of growth potential. I mean, there's a huge amount of content providers out there. And so this is a business that if you'd have said at the beginning of 2025, this is going to go up 176%, I'd have never believed you. And yet here we are at the end of 2025 with an actual takeover fight, because I believe Netflix made an offer, and I'm sure there was someone else that went after them as well.
Paramount.
Yeah. Paramount, they're still bidding for it. They're still fighting and scrapping over it. Netflix need the content. Paramount clearly need the content, but there's got other bits and pieces within Warner Brothers that Paramount want as well as the content. And this is it. Ex content is very expensive to produce and put together. And Matthew, being the gamer that he is and working in that space, will tell you it can cost a fortune and take a long time to produce stuff. And if you've got that legacy archive, which Warner Brothers have, it's gold dust, and I think that scrap's going to continue into 2026. The other aspect of it is that there's a connection via, which one is it now? There is a Trump connection now. I'm trying to think which relationship it is.
It's his
But
son-in-law.
there, it's again, son-in-law. Son-in-law. That's correct. Yeah. So I'm wondering whether any leverage will be utilized on that front. It would be a shame, because given the net the journey of Netflix, where it was written off by Blockbuster and then it superseded and Blockbuster is gone, it would be, and then Warner Brothers at some stage via AOL could have purchased probably Netflix on the cheap, and now being purchased by Netflix. So the irony of the scale and the fact the accelerated growth of Netflix is unbelievable, that they can come back and buy that aspect of Warner Brothers Discovery, not Warner Brothers All In, is phenomenal. And if this takeover hadn't happened, I would suspect, as Henry said, it would have been another year where Warner Brothers Discovery shares wouldn't have gone that far. So if you look at that 5-year chart, there's like 1 year where it had something going on, and then it essentially has been, what's that, 5-year CAGR of 0.3. Yeah, so great timing. That filter you might need to share with other people, Paul, if it produces results like that out of the blue regarding Warner Brothers, and we'll see where it ends up. But did you say you'd sold and exited now, Warner Brothers,
I
or?
exited a few months ago when the directors were dumping all their shares.
Yeah, and then you re-entered.
I re-entered when Netflix put the bid in very recently.
I love the way you phrase that. The directors are dumping their shares. I'm sure when they put out the RNS, it's just a careful repositioning for tax purposes.
Yeah, watch what
It's
they do.
Jeremy,
Watch what they
I'm on
do.
your side of the fence. Usually when directors are selling, I'm going, uh-oh.
It's very
Exactly.
knee-jerk.
Yeah.
No, like those two, Paul. Thank you so much for sharing those and showing those on the screen, because there are metrics there on that summary page that you've just shown there. Red, 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 red everywhere. And Henry's looking at it going, my eyes, he wouldn't go anywhere near that. And some of the times I'm having conversations with him saying, Henry, it's about the catalyst. He's going, no, can't see any catalyst. And that 175% is just another reiteration of, yeah, Henry, don't always just look at the metrics. Have a look at what the catalyst could be. And what, you say it yourself, Henry, the amount of content they must have over the past 10, 15, 30 years. Embedded value, intrinsic value.
Well, I'm
Right.
certain Warren Buffett made a comment along those lines about Disney. You know, Disney, little kids, they'll watch the Disney catalog year after year after year. It's been going 100 years and they're still watching Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, Cinderella, Lion King. You know, these are timeless classics and Disney owns them. Why would you not want a bit of that? Now, we're probably 20 years on from when he made that comment, but I think the essence of what he was driving at is he was really onto something there.
Still holds true. I agree with you, mate. I agree with you. Right. Thank you for that, Paul. Thank you for sharing. It's good to hear your insights and your knowledge. And you're not just behind the screen looking at it and never using it yourself. So it's brilliant. But definitely have to put out an article at some point regarding the filters that you prefer, and maybe share that with us all. That'd be a really good idea for 2026. And if you need to a nudge, I can also nudge Matt as well at ShareScope. So look, get Paul to write this article then. You know what I mean? Right. We're going to go to one of our guests now. I think it would be an ideal time to go back to Paul Eden Brow. Following that, we're going to go to Andy, and then we're going to go to Matthew, and then we'll conclude with Henry and myself talking about stock. Paul, you've already introduced yourself and been on the show, so I'm just going to cut straight to the quick regarding asking you about a stock for 2026 that you think could do well, the reason why you've chosen it, the niche it's in, and we're not going to vote on it, but it may be something that we as panelists on the show with you might be interested in, and our global audience, mate, so go for it.
Yeah, so this one, it's sort of not my comfort zone really. It's something I wouldn't normally look at, but just had a couple of experiences that I'll talk about. And I'm looking forward to seeing Henry's face in a minute, because I think he's going to wince when I say that this is a retailer, because I know he hates retailers, doesn't he? But this is a UK
Instinctive.
retailer that I think could do okay moving forward. It's very much a turnaround story. So they've struggled over the last sort of 5 years, but then in the last 18 months or so, it's just sort of starting to come good. And that business is Currys. Again, like 5, 10 years ago, I would have never imagined investing in Currys. I think it was a bit of a disaster of a retailer, really. But I've looked at the numbers, obviously, but this is really my interest in this company came from one or two personal experiences in the store, shopping experiences. And I've just been really impressed with the way I feel like the business has changed over the last 2 years. They've updated all their stores. It's really modern feel in there. They've got a really good click and collect service that works effectively. Their pricing is much, much more competitive than I think it was a few years ago. Obviously, a big red flag here is the online Amazon and AO and et cetera, being a big competitor, big rival to them. But in my experience, Currys quite good at price matching them. So I'm not convinced that there's actually a massive difference in pricing between somewhere like Amazon and Currys. And in fact, if you get the right time of the year or the right deal, you can probably get a better deal at Currys than you can on some of the online retailers. So yeah, I think there's some results coming out soon, but the last results that were out a couple of months ago were looking positive. It's on a PE ratio, I think, of about 11.8. Cash generative. Sales are really improving. I think the cash generation went up 100% on the year on year, I think. And a lot of people think Currys is just electricals, but there's more to the business than that. They also own iD Mobile, the network company, one of the cheaper phone networks that you can access. I think that's actually a third of the market cap of the company now, iD Mobile. And also, they've got some exposure in Scandinavia in terms of retailing kitchen sales, which have been a good money spinner for Currys. So I totally understand there's some risk involved. I don't think this is going to multi-bag or anything like that. Of course, it's not. But I think my experience of Currys and some of these numbers, in my view, I think Currys could be a good bet for the next 12 months.
I
This is a
actually
quick hello
thought
to
you
you, our
found one of the
valued
few
Twin Peaks
retail names
Investing
that I do
Podcast
actually
listener.
quite like.
Whatever channel you're listening to,
mate, brilliant.
please make sure to
I'll take that as a
subscribe,
win, I
and
think.
you'll always be the
I
first
man
to
that
get the
hates
results.
retail has bought
Thank you
retail.
for your
Henry,
continued
explain
support.
yourself.
Well, I like Currys so much for the reason you mentioned this is a bit of a turnaround story. I think it's already turned around. I think it's been turning around for a long time, and it's actually quite a healthy looking business. You know, like you say, cash generative, positive return on capital. The store experience is good. I think there are an increasing or a large percentage of the population who aren't particularly tech savvy, who appreciate being able to go into a store where there's a nice young person to help them buy technology, which is what you get when you go to Currys. I think you've got fears about Chinese technology. You know, sort of white labeled goods. We don't know where it's coming from. Whereas Currys has got supply chain locked down. They've done the sort of quality management side of things. So I think actually this is one of the areas of retail. It's a little bit like supermarkets. I think this is quite resilient as a sector. And then you look at the price graph as well. And this is, you know, you say this isn't going to be a multi-bagger. Well, actually, if you bought this at the lows of, I think it was down at 50 pence. It's already nearly three bagged. And so, again, I'm not necessarily saying if you buy it at 120, it's going to go up to 360 next year. But I think it's got some legs. I think it's a much broader, more diverse business than people realize. I didn't know, for example, that it had the IT network. So, yeah, you've definitely found one of the very, very few retailers that I don't have a totally allergic reaction to.
Well, that's made my
Fantastic,
week,
Paul.
that has, Henry. I'm chuffed that I've won you round on that one.
Or as Matthew said, your battleship was sunk, Henry. No, great call that one, Paul. And equally, I think the beauty of it is, and I'm a bit of a tech Luddite, and Henry will confirm that, and so will Paul Hall. So if I have any technical problems with a computer, the first thing I do is go back to Currys and have a chat with them. The tech desk will speak to me and help me out and look at me and you know, give me a little hug and go, there. It's not broken. It's retrievable. We can sort it out. And they tend to just look after me. No, it's not that they're sympathetic to the fact that I haven't got a clue what I'm doing, but that
That's the
actually
thing
they
about
want you
old
to have.
people's homes, Peter. They are generally quite nice to people that just wander in, that are a bit confused.
Absolutely, but they want you to get the best usage of the
Yeah.
kit that you've got. You
I
know, they're
think
not
that's
always trying to just sell it to you. I heard what you said,
right.
Henry. Thank you very much.
I think that's
Sorry,
really
Matt's got.
changed. Yeah, that's really changed, hasn't it? I feel with Currys over the last 5 or 10 years, that customer service element, like Henry says, it's actually a good experience going into the shop.
Absolutely.
And they don't just sell TVs and fridges. There's all the latest tech and gadgetry in there, and security cameras and all sorts of stuff in there. So yeah, I've been quite impressed with my experiences with Currys.
Absolutely. I mean, Matthew's got his hand up, but I'll say this one thing before we go to Matthew. I went in there only about 2 weeks ago, and I thought, what's that doing here? And I saw an electronic treadmill. Yeah, a treadmill. I was like, what?
Fitness
Why?
tech.
But clearly, they're diversifying their offerings as well. You know, they've got the fridges there, they've got the food mixers there, they had a treadmill there. And I was like, okay, that's interesting. Mr. Matthew Gregory, what are you going to say, mate? What are you going to add?
So yeah, I was going to mention, I kind of put it in the comments, but I kind of bring it up here for the folks watching at home, is we're kind of talking a lot about like metrics here in terms of like operating margins and all that sort of thing. But this is kind of one of the beauties of being a UK investor looking at UK companies is you can do something you can't, that unless you've got a lot of frequent flyer miles, you can do proper Peter Lynch investing where one of the metrics that isn't going to show up in ShareScope is when did they last refresh the stores? What's the experience like? You can actually be a customer and go, whoa, this business is turning around. Now, if you're UK-based and you want to know the same about Walmart, unless, say, you've got a lot of frequent flyer miles on your on you, that's a hard thing to do. And it's kind of one of those underappreciated parts of investing is actually just putting some shoe leather down and actually going out to the business and interacting with it. And it's not something you have to be like wheeling and dealing in the city. You can in this case go, I need a new toaster. So it's not kind of like I need to like merge two £2 billion companies together. You can do it off my toaster's broke. Oh, I'm going to go to Currys and see what they're like.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe today using the TWINPEETS promo code and you can save up to £69. Visit shareScope.co.uk for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Absolutely. Yeah, great, great point, Matt. Very well made, mate. And I think this goes back to the time when we had Phil Oakley on the pod for a series of podcasts. And he would always talk about that experience and actually being the customer to see how good the company and the quality of the company was. You know, be the customer, go to the store as you're walking around and you're seeing the vans going past and what been your interactions have been like with them? What was did the product last when you actually bought it and so on and so forth? So yeah, it's definitely a bit of shoe leather is positive for you, can be positive for your portfolio. Right. Thank you for that one. Very much appreciated, Paul, and well done with getting Henry to own up to the fact he owns a retailer. Happy days.
No, I don't own it. I just like it.
Oh, sorry. I thought you said you bought it.
No. I'd looked at buying it.
He's edging that way, Paul. He's not just going to have a curry first.
I'll probably let it
he's
go gonna... up another 50% before I buy
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and then regret. Yeah, absolutely. Right. Thank you for that, Paul. And very well done with that one. Hopefully it'll do as well in 2026. For you and others that are considering buying it. We're going to go to Andy at Spenno006 now, and he's going to tell us about a stock that he fancies for 2026 and why.
Yeah,
Andy,
so
over to you, mate.
The stock that I put on my list was Applied Nutrition. So caveats are, obviously, my kind of normal investing style is funds, investment trusts, big companies, that kind of stuff. I generally don't have enough time to do this type of research, but the last few weeks I've had a bit of time on my hands, so I thought I'd delve into ShareePad, start to understand all these filters and these newfangled things to start to look at some of these quality metrics that Henry and Pete have been talking about, I've been listening to for years. So Applied Nutrition, it's a company that basically makes kind of supplements, vitamins, protein drinks, energy drinks, and I think that's it's a big kind of space, a big growing industry around the world. Now, I'm not saying there's not competition in this space, but it recently IPO'd onto the market, I think it's 2024, and unlike many, the graph goes up to the right. So that immediately piqued my interest. And then looking at some of the metrics on there, PEG 1.5. I think it was lower when I looked at it before. It's recently had a bump in the last few days. Return on capital employed. And then I started to dig into, the story behind them. Paul, if you could just click on director dealings button, so the DD. Yeah, so you start to have a look down the shareholder, and second on the list, JD Sports and Fashion, which is, that again piqued my interest. And then a little bit further down the list, Andrew James Bell. So these are names of people that have, and companies that have been very successful in growing businesses from a small base. And then I listened to some of the investor videos from results, without really looking into at this point the financial side of it. I really like the story that they told, and I really like the fact that they're a vertically integrated business. So, they've got their own factory. They employ like 84, I think it's 84, no, 200 odd people. They now ship into about 80 odd different countries around the world. They're expanding into the US and actually getting into some of the retail areas in the US. So again, pretty interesting. And then if you can go back to the financials, Paul. Just looking at that. Sorry, can you go into forecast? And then looking across the forecast, EPS forecast for 26, 27, 28. It's growing business again, ticks another box. And then borrowing, they've got net cash on the balance sheet, so it ticks a lot of areas of, it's a growing market. You go onto TikTok, you go onto all these applications. There's generally bikini clad people trying to sell some supplements to you on, every third reel that you see these days, or some muscly dude trying to explain his kettlebell workout. I mean, it's all over the place, and I think, there's a kind of, to me, there's a barbell in life. There's types of people who go and enjoy themselves and would be, looking down the Diageo route and maybe getting their whiskey and having a few beers. But then there's other people who go to the gym. And yeah, as I started to look into the finances, started to look into like the history, and the forecast, and then the price up until, I'd say, a couple of weeks ago, probably at the price it's at in a minute, it's not a buy, I wouldn't say. Unless you buy into that real growth story. But the levels I was buying was a bit low, kind of between 150, 160 kind of area. So lesson learnt is, as I think we spoke about Peter before, kind of scaling into positions. This is maybe one time where scaling into a position worked against me, because I hadn't built the position big enough, and then all of a sudden it take a massive jump, and it's kind of like, oh, okay, maybe you missed it this time. Let's take that money out. Let's recycle it. If it drops back down to a buying level, then it'd be happily be a company I'll jump in on.
Good call, and good research on the actual individuals that you found on the ShareScout platform that actually own the stock. Because the merit of finding that is that those individuals are very serious individuals indeed.
Yeah.
You've got your man from AJ Bell there. You've got JD Sports people investing in there. There is a reason why they've added what is that 24 million holdings of shares, and they've added to that recently since the IPO as well, no doubt.
Yeah.
So they believe in what the company is doing, and for them to put their own hard-earned money on it, they're not going to invest in something that they think is going to lose them money. And invariably with a company like that, JD Sports more so than AJ Bell, Mr. Andrew James Bell, more so them, because of that sports relationship, like you say, with the people that want to look lean, mean, and keen, not necessarily on a beach either.
Yeah.
Any park near you, they've got next to nothing on because they want to show the hard work they've done at the gym. And there's another person on this podcast who's going to talk about his gym work in a minute. I'm sure we're going to talk about that in a second, but there's a potential there. That the reason why JD Sports PLC has got a stake in the company is because they're looking at it and thinking, eventually maybe we can actually purchase that and make it part of JD
Yeah.
Sports. We're selling all the kit. Why not sell, the protein shakes or the other products that they actually put together, or the nutrition side of it, or the healthcare side of it, the mind, body, and soul side of it as well. So maybe that's another reason why they've taken an early interest. I suspect they probably took a stake before IPO and then added to it since then as well. So great call. Early days in that stock. It'd be interesting to see what they've done because it didn't seem to go very far until the last couple of months. It's just taken off. So I'm suspecting that's a good set of results more recently, and everyone's gone, oh, maybe it's not, a stock that we should be underappreciating. Maybe it's a stock we should be buying, and therefore everyone's thought the same thing at the same time because the good results have come out and they've gone and taken off.
I think
So
it was a bit of an unexpected trading update that launched the
ah,
stratospheric.
okay.
So, when it's one of those ahead of expectations, and it's like, I wish it was like
Absolutely.
ahead of expectations 6 months down the line, I could have had a proper position. But hey ho, that's life.
It's life indeed, mate. But good company. I think it's founder owned as well, if I remember rightly. The guy who founded it is still involved in the company. So yeah, good call. Another, like you say, UK company. I think they're up north somewhere. HQ'd wise, if I remember rightly, or maybe not. But yeah, good company. Henry, put us out of our misery, mate. Tell us about your involvement with the gym, and have you started taking any protein shakes, mate?
I wouldn't necessarily say I'm a gym buff by any means, but I long time listeners will have heard me mention I've been wearing braces recently. I've gone from a 37 inch waist this year. I signed up with a personal trainer in the summer. I've gone from a 37 inch waist to a 30 and a half this morning.
Wow.
I've dropped more than 20 pounds.
That's
And I
awesome. Well
have. I
bravo,
have
mate.
been
Bravo.
I've taken the odd protein shake here and there, but a large part of it's just been recompositioning my diet. So I've not necessarily had to make huge changes. It's a little bit of extra work, a little bit of extra walking, a little bit of, tweaking of the diet. But the change has just been phenomenal. I mean, I've never been overweight as such, but it honestly, I just feel like a whole new person. It's only been 6 months. The really scary bit for me, my coach has just started me going to the gym. So I was doing home workouts, terrified of the gym, never felt like it was the place for me. And he said, you're going to get such better results if you go to the gym. So I've started going to my local gym. First of all, had a great time. If anyone's thinking about it, yes, get started. But the scary bit, he said, well, you've done the easy stuff now. You've dropped the weight. So the next 6 months, we're going to be bulking you up. So I've got visions in 6 months' time of not being able to get through doors because my shoulders are so big.
I have to nickname you the mountain.
Exactly. I'll be snorting protein powder at work.
Oh no, don't, no, don't want to do that. Don't want to do that. No,
Oh,
brilliant. Sorry.
on a slightly related note, Andy, it is also really, really lovely to hear that you've looked at the quality metrics that Peter and I talk about, because I was dying for Paul to flick over to the financial screen on that company, and every single one of those quality metrics had me going, yes, Andy, yes, I want a bit of this company. So
Brilliant.
yeah, if you've taken anything from the podcast to help you get into applied nutrition, I'm very, very happy for you and very interesting company.
Thanks, Amy.
Well done, Andy. Great stock, great pick, and as Emily said, great metrics on that one. So we'll watch that throughout 2026, and hopefully you can keep in touch with us on LinkedIn and also on YouTube and on X as to how it's faring, and keep us up to date when the good news keeps rolling through. Congratulations on that one. Okay, Matthew with a single T. Gregory, what do you have regarding your favoured interest regarding 2026? And it cannot be a company from Nottingham.
No, for once, I am not going to pick a certain company from Nottingham, although I will be holding it through 2026.
Yeah, and it probably will do well again. Go for it, sir.
But yeah, I'm quite interested in RELX. Paul, could you bring up Sherpad for me? So whilst I only recently learned about this company at the AIC, when it was in Nick Train's talk. So this was after I'd been chased out and protected by Henry for mentioning Games Workshop. But that's kind of the last I thought about it. And so recently I've been looking ahead at 2026 and what do I want to put my money in for next year. And would you mind going to the FTSE and putting my filter on? So basically, I did a scan of the market, and this is basically the bulk of what I've been looking at. And this is kind of where I'd narrowed down the UK shares to. And so basically, I've been looking at return on invested capital, excluding goodwill. That was...
Can I just interrupt for 1 second there? Paul, you've got the BATS screen up. We need the RELX one up, please, mate. Sorry. For Matt.
So you can see the screen I've gone with. I am personally more of a quality investor, so I've very much gone for companies that are efficiently using, that are run efficiently, good operating margins, high free cash conversion, but also have a level of safety involving debt. So we can see with RELX, we've got an interest cover of 10 point of over 10 times, and the dividends are covered by free cash flow 1.8 times. So that's a lot of safety going on. Return on invested capital, excluding goodwill, and I wish to thank Phil Oakley for pointing out that particular metric. And this screen is very much borrowed from Algy Hall's book, Four Ways to Beat the Market. So we can see return on invested capital, excluding goodwill, is 84.6%, and it's been growing over 3 years as well. Operating margins are 33.9, and they're growing as well. And free cash conversion is 92.7%. So that got me interested in digging into it. And so it's obviously had a pretty bad year in terms of its run as a share. It got run up recently. So as you can see, I was going to share the previous few years where it does use AI products, but it is not a developer of AI. It uses them as part of its suite of tools, as primarily it began as a merger of two publishers, and it focuses primarily on risk management, which is where Henry might even bump into them there. Science, technology, and medicine, where it has a bunch of interesting tools there. Legal. And then it also runs exhibitions, which I was most intrigued by. It runs the New York Comic Con. So that one definitely gained a tick from me in that one as well. Yeah, I was surprised by that one. Those are kind of its main areas it kind of goes into. So the thing that's been pushing the share price down this year is concerns that AI will eat it. Now, the big thing is that all of its data is proprietary, and by that I don't just mean it's behind a paywall, it's behind an actual portal, so ChatGPT can't scrape it off the internet. A lot of its data is owned by it and is off on a database somewhere, not accessible to be pulled off by general purpose AI. And the AI tooling they're using is specialist narrow focus trained purely on their data sets, which is interesting because the general purpose AI that you'll bump into with like ChatGPT, Gemini, that sort of thing, one of the reasons why they're prone to hallucinate is they are general purpose. They're designed to do anything, whereas its tooling is trained to do a quite narrow focus task. It's a bit like you see photos of like the home helper robot from the 1960s that was going to do everything and would basically fail utterly. We ended up with those. They're called Roomba. It just does the hoovering. It's quite good at it, but it only does the hoovering. It's not going to make a cup of tea at the same time. And so each of their various AI tooling, and they've got things beyond AI, and for some professions it's almost required. I mean, RELX in terms of legal, I think it's number one in the UK. It's either, I guess, number two in the US for like legal data provider. I think it's globally it runs first and second. And and so I think it's this is a US, this is a UK AI play, I think, that's been beaten up by a lot of negative sentiment around AI will eat it. I think it's at a very interesting price entry point. As we can see, the target price is currently at £44. In terms of growth, I don't think it's going to in 1 year like 10x or anything. It might do. I'd quite like that, but I don't think it will. This is going to be, I think, more of a just steady, stable year after year kind of like growth. It does pay a small dividend. It's 2.11%. But yeah, I think it's definitely worth taking a look at. It's October trading update. It revenue growth was up 7%, which beat estimates. And yeah, I think it's in a very it's very interestingly priced where it is at the moment for maybe taking a second look at.
Very well presented there, Matthew. I will share now that and I think I've shared it previously on another pod. I've been waiting historically for many a year watching this share price go up and up and up. And then I decided this year to take a punt, not a punt, an investment in it, because I saw it as an AI story that we had on our own AI sort of hero. In our midst, and therefore it would do fine. And because of the niche space that they were in, I thought that they would do really, really well. I think the share price is probably down about 16% since I bought it, if not more. But you touched on a very, very important point regarding their data being proprietary and who needs it and must have it. And those others that want to hallucinate can't actually access that rich data of theirs. It's their data. But the share price has just come down from around 36 down to 30 since I've purchased it. I'm waiting for a catalyst. I'm waiting for some news on them, and I'll probably add to it despite it being down there, because I think if it gets to the stage where it gets any cheaper as one of our larger tech companies, the real risk is we will lose it. One of the US companies will just go, yeah, we can bolt that on. And it's at 55 million market cap, FTSE 100 company, but it will just take somebody paying 25% more than that. Yeah, 70, 80 billion, and it's gone. And we've seen the size and the scale of the takeovers and the valuations that some of these companies are being taken out at, and it could easily be taken out. I hope it doesn't, and there's a recovery, and people acknowledge that actually what they've got here is like you say, a global entity where they're number one, number two, if not, a close number three globally. So they are one of the best in class at what they do. And they're still throwing off a lot of cash. So we'll see what happens with that. But yeah, I hold that. It's underwater. I'm happy to continue to hold it. It would take a massive, massive profit warning or a significant loss of a significant contract. For me to change my mind on it, and I'm happy to be patient on it for a little while longer. Andy, you had a comment as well. You wanted to ask Matt something, or you wanted to make a statement, please?
Yeah, just a question is with these type of proprietary data sets, having some experience with this type of thing in my background, do you see a point where some of these AI companies will recognize the value of that proprietary data set and ask or see if there's any kind of, like API type access into it? Maybe not for a consumer facing, but maybe for enterprise facing businesses. Say if you're someone who's licensing kind of Anthropic or something, and you okay, in my model that I want to do for my business, to have this RELX data will be hugely valuable. Do you see it as like a kind of arbitrage play in there where it's another way to license access to that data, or do you think maybe that might
No, I
cannibalize
think
it?
if they allowed Google, ChatGPT, Anthropic, whichever one you want to go with in there, that would actually be a sell signal for me, because that is their moat. There is no reason why they should ever allow anyone to cross that moat. It's the reason why they're investing in their own AI tooling, so that they don't have to do that, because Yeah, I think the moment they let somebody into their ecosphere, that's them giving away. Basically, that's it. That is them just lowering the drawbridge to the barbarians, basically. And so, yeah, if I held it and I heard they'd done a deal with any of the big AI providers, I would be honest, be off ski, because I would only see their value being destroyed by that. I don't know if anyone's got any other opinions on that, but that would be my thing.
It's a difficult one to Peter's kind of thought process is would someone come in and buy it? And I think that decision would be made when the value of that data would be appreciated by these external companies. Now, if they could see, well, hang on a minute, I could see RELX for, what's it, 55 billion, but having that in our sphere that we could then push out and value up X, Y, and Z, it's who makes that value decision. And then potentially they could come in and say, okay, yeah, great moat, but we've got a tank, so we'll have that. Thank you.
It's a risk, but
Well, it's a great company though. Great company.
no, great call there, Matt. And we'll see. Well, I say great call. It's not been a great call for me thus far. We'll see what happens in 2026. I'm hoping it has a better 2026. It's a tech company. It's involved in AI, and it was one of them gems. It's one of them companies that was just kept racing and racing away. But it's rolled over now. We'll see what happens with it and whether that catalyst arrives in 2026. Hopefully it's not a takeover. So we'll see what happens with that. But a good call and good luck with it. Did you say you've already purchased it, or you're
No,
it's one you've considered?
that's kind of like my that's going to be my purchase for next year. I'm probably going to drip
Okie doke.
feed, and I tend to do tranche in investing, so I put a bit in, wait a bit, buy a bit more, and that sort of thing.
No, I get that. Well, I'm hoping you have better luck than me when you enter with it. So good luck with that one.
Cheers.
Right, I'm going to mention this stock before we go to Henry, because Henry's going to talk about a couple. Then I'll come back and probably do one more after that. And I want to speak about this stock because I've already purchased it, but it's just only now broken out for the year. And I think the last time I looked at it, year to date, I think it was up 2%. So it's not one of them that's absolutely taken off and smashed the market to pieces, but it pays a nice dividend. It is potentially one of the largest publicly traded hedge fund companies in the world. And it's called Man Group. And if anyone from the 70s, 80s, or 90s remember, Man Group used to be a group of blokes that were all dressed, painted in blue. But this is a hedge fund. Yeah, I'm showing my age, aren't I? Yeah, so 2.4 million market cap, forward PE 13.8. The ROSH has been decreasing as things have been getting more and more competitive. It's down at 9.1% at the moment. Free cash flow sitting there. That's the thing that's key there. 156% conversion rate and way above its 3-year average of 97.9, which I'm very, very keen on as a push. And if you look at the 5-year CAGR, which you can just about see on there, 5-year CAGR is still a very respectable 10.4% versus the stock market. And I just see, with regards to the volatility that we've got across markets, the geopolitical nature of markets, what's happening in the US, what's happening in Russia and Ukraine, and all the other stuff that's going on. Everyone's looking, pardon the pun, looking for an edge. And I perceive that, the recovery that they've had from almost £1.50 to be late summer-ish, climbing back up to nearly £2.20. I can see that continuing higher over the next 12 months to 2 years. And I'm hoping that it can continue to compound at a minimum of 10%. And you can see from 2024 to almost the end of 2025, it's not at that 10% CAGR. It's recovered. It's up 2% so far this year. Dividend will be added to that at some point as well. Into 2026, could the compounding nature revert back to where it was before? Hit that average of 10%, takes it to £2.40 plus. any other potential catalysts, profitability increasing, inflows increasing again. I see this particular stock as a potential stock that could do really well. And you can see the confidence thing there regarding consensus. The view is that it could potentially outperform. We'll see. It's one of those sort of stocks that markets fluctuate, markets have increased volatility. They should outperform when there's more volatility, but that doesn't always guarantee the case, because the last 18 months or so, if not 2 years of 2024 and 2025, it's not performed that well, despite all the added volatility that's in the market. If we look at the the balance sheet, please, Paul, you will see there that the situation regarding their assets over the past, excuse me, I've got a dry throat now, their total assets, despite, you know, the portfolio of assets not performing versus the share price, has essentially almost gone up about 80% from 2.608 to 4.57. So their assets have been increasing over the past 3 to 4 years. And that's what you need to be looking for regarding a stock that's involved in assets. Yeah, that's allocating different strategies, is getting inflows and outflows. And their assets have actually been increasing over the past few years. And if it continues that way, eventually the profitability will increase. So that's what I would like to suggest as a stock for 2026. I already own it, so I'm a little bit biased on that. And I'm hoping that they will actually come out, like you say, Andy, with Paul, a note that says we've outperformed. We're ahead of expectation, and have a little rather than that little tepid sort of move they've had over the last 2 years. Any thoughts, gents?
I'm sorry, Peter. I'm going to give this one an absolute kicking.
Go for it. Explain why.
We've had some great contributions from our guests, but oh my lord!
Oh, and I've let the time down. Oh my gosh!
Did you hit your head? Have you seen these guys? So, Man Group. If you look at actually in the chat, Andy's already on this one. Fascinating website, www.man.com. Go and have a look. Fascinating business, this. They're all about technology enabled investing, technology driven hedge funds, analytics, AI. If there's some sort of technological solution, they are applying it to financial markets, and frankly it's been a disaster. You look at their funds performance over the last couple of years, it's a car crash. It's just a sea of losses, underperformance, overvaluations. Whatever their computers are doing, they're not doing it very well. So I am super skeptical, and it's one that I want to believe in it, because you go and look at the website and it sounds amazing. You know, listen to some of the interviews with the fund managers. It sounds incredible. They've got this institute, this technology enabled research lab that's looking at how to apply technology to the financial market. You think, how could you not be raking in so much money? And yet they're sort of not. And so I feel like Man Group's one of these businesses that they're promising every year is going to be a great year, and it just doesn't come. So, you know, good luck with it. But of all the fund managers there are out there, that's not a fave for me.
Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
I've got others that are worse. I mean, I could have spoken about it on the last pod, but wow. No, I appreciate that. And this is the beauty of the markets. And I my tendency, as you know, is always looking where others fear to tread. You know, I tend to go there. And I do get that sort of reaction often. It's like, what is he thinking, this madman? And I'm absolutely fine with that. You know, right now it's lowly. It's I think it's unloved at the minute. It's had a bit of a recovery, and it could stay this way for a little while, being unloved. If they get anything right, that they correct anything that they didn't correct in the last 2 or 3 years, and the inflows continue and the profitability and the performance, more importantly, regarding their strategies actually starting to deliver, this could accelerate immensely. If we go to who owns the stock, Paul, on the financial side of it, is look at all the different people that actually hold a stock. One of the people that you may not be able to see on that particular one, a long-standing shareholder of the stock, is Schroders. Yeah, so you've got Andy Brough and others that are involved in it, and you've got a few others that actually hold a stock. But it's one of those sort of things. I'm happy to get the 5.8% divvy yield whilst I wait, and see what happens to them over the next year. If they get it right, the share price will accelerate. If they continue to have the funds not delivering, people will take the money and run and put it elsewhere and give it to another fund manager. But this is alternative asset management, not fund management. This is a hedge fund. Yeah. And Henry's going, yeah, and they've hedged strongly for the last few years. And you'd be correct. And I'm buying it right now when it's, or have been buying it, when it's unloved. And that's when I want to buy. I don't want to
I
buy it when
guarantee
it's
you,
already.
Pete, if you put me in a room with a Man Group fund manager, I'd probably get my arms ripped off and beaten with the soggy end for saying what I've just said. I am
But
certain
Henry,
they'd give a robust defense.
no. The robustness of what you've said and your reaction to it is needed because they haven't performed.
This is the
Yeah,
thing. If you're
we're
going to
on here
wow
to
me with
just.
technology, come and wow me, because right now
Yeah,
you're basically
but
just
we're on
putting
here
your
to talk
toaster
about
into
stocks
your
that could do
trading
well
platform.
in 2026. And for the past 2 years, this stock has not done well. So you're absolutely right to say, I'm not going anywhere near it. I'm happy and I'm cool with that. We don't have to agree.
Prove me wrong,
Yeah.
Pete. Come back at the end of 26
But
and
my
tell me
money's
it's
already in there,
rebacked.
and I'm waiting for the next catalyst to add some more. We will see, and we'll come back to it next year when we're recording this. Andy, you had a comment as well. Please
Yeah,
shout.
so a couple of things on this one is I've just actually dropped a little bit of money into Man.
Oh dear, Andrew's not. You've lost a friend in Henry now, mate. He's gone, oh no, I'm beginning to
Doing
like this
so
guy.
well.
Probably to take the complete 180 of Henry's comments about the research and putting my Uber kind of positive hat on. So I can't say too much, but I've spoken to some people at Man in a previous life, in a previous company. So around kind of, the way that they use data and the way that they use the machine learning on the data, I can't say anything more than that, but just overview of the conversation, I was very impressed with the way that they spoke about kind of data sets that they didn't really understand and how they wanted to kind of trial it to use it to see if it could answer some questions that they didn't really know the answer of. Whereas a lot of time you kind of get railroaded in these conversations. They're not, they have a fixed conversation that they want this and at X price. But these guys were quite open to saying, we actually don't know what we don't know about this, but we think it's going to be quite useful and X, Y, and Z. Yeah, I can't get too much into the details of the conversation, obviously for commercial reasons, but I came out of it impressed with, I can kind of see where these guys are going with it, and it's encouraging that they're looking out into space. They're looking into ways of doing things not conventionally, which potentially it only takes one of these ideas to take off, and it could be an exponential, rise. Likewise, it could be an exponential drop. So I kind of take the view of Peter on this at the minute. I'm happy to take the dividend, sit on it for a bit, see what
Let
happens.
smart people be smart, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I as an aside, I would genuinely, if I got the opportunity to go around Man Group's offices, they're just down the road from me, I'd love it. If I could get a tour around and go and meet some of their fund managers and actually see what they do, because the website's fantastic. There's so much interesting stuff on it. But just look at the actual performance of the underlying funds and go, it sounds great, but it's clearly not working very well at the minute. So,
Yeah, no, it's good. It's a fair point, Henry. My other little caveat is that this company was founded in 1783.
oh, I
Yeah,
didn't know that.
so they've navigated a few travails in their time. Yeah, So if
Oh,
they can
they can
last
put up
that
with some
long term.
slagging off from me then.
No. Henry, you're absolutely spot on regarding the failure of some of their funds and the strategies. You're spot on, mate. But as you know, and I re reiterate, I'm often looking at the ones that people are going, I ain't going anywhere near it. And the fact that you came out so, animated regarding it was music to my ears in a sense of great. You are spot on because I've looked at all the warts and all and gone, let's see what happens in 2026. I've started taking my position. Andy, have you taken a position or not? Or not? I don't know.
Yeah, just small, just a small.
Just small.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens with it. And if and I, and I, you know the stocks that we've talked about many times on the pod, I get pied a lot, mate. Those flans just keep coming sometimes. Like, okay, got it wrong, got it wrong. But it is what it is. That's markets. I do not know. No, there's the investing is the art of doing it anyway in the face of uncertainty, mate. So it's another one. Yeah, we'll see what happens. Right. Over to you, Henry. I think we'll give you two on the bounce here because you didn't get a chance to talk about positives ones for
Don't know
2026.
if I'm brave enough to now. Have you
No,
are you sat down and
no, mate. I'm absolutely chilled. Mastered my psychology, mate.
Right.
Zen.
Well, thankfully I've not got a gold mine with no gold at the bottom of it. I need a new analogy, I think. I feel like I'm overusing the gold mine. So bit of a caveat, all of the businesses I'm about to talk about I own. I am not going to tell you they're going to the moon. I don't think any of them are going to multibag, but I think they're all good businesses. They are businesses that I hope do well, obviously, because I own them. I would also say that I'm in profit on all of these, so please do not go out and buy these today, having heard me talk about them, because I got them at a very different price. So do your own research, have a think about it. And bear in mind that, not everything I say is going to happen does happen. Usually it's the other way around. So the first business is a little resource stock. It's a royalties company. And this is a business that I've owned for a couple of years. And when I put out my morning RNSs, people usually go, Henry, you're an absolute idiot. Why do you own this? The CEO is an idiot. He doesn't know what he's doing. The board are destroying value. This business is going to the dogs. Clearly, you don't know what you're doing. And I put up with this for about 3 years, as the share price went down and down and down. But I have always had the view that as a royalties business, what it is effectively doing is buying a claim on resources that are in the ground. And because they are in the ground and they're not necessarily extracted, they're not necessarily getting revenue for them yet. Until such time as the mining companies that are mining that site decide to go and extract the ore from that location. And so cash flows can be wildly all over the place. One quarter, you might have the mining company mining within the royalty area. The next quarter, they've moved on down the road, and so there's no revenue. This business, if you can't guess, is Ecora Resources. The ticker is ECOR. If you'd like to pull up the figures for us, Paul, you will see this year I am a very, very happy shareholder. The shares are up nearly 70% from the beginning of the year, after having fallen, 35% the last 2 years. And the reason that this has happened is that the revenue streams from some of these royalties are finally starting to come online. And the commodity prices, more importantly, the commodity prices for the underlying basket of assets have started to increase. And so Ecora, historically, it was a business called Kestrel Royalties, I think it was. It basically owned a large coal mine. They decided a couple of years ago coal was not the future. The coal was running out, so they wanted to sort of wind down the mine. They were going to extract the coal. They were going to use the cash flow from the coal mine to go and buy royalties in lots of other metals. And so they went out and they bought royalties in precious metals and industrial metals and green metals, copper mines, all sorts of interesting things. Some of them have done terrifically well, some of them are still in development. But the market didn't necessarily like this shift because it went from being hugely cash generative in 2021, 22, to the cash flow sort of drying up over time as this coal mine gradually fell to pieces, and the coal was extracted, and the new royalties were purchased, expending cash flow and not necessarily getting a huge amount back initially. Now, the business has sort of turned a bit of a corner, as you can see from the share price. It's just hit 108 as of today, all the way down from the low of, I think it was sub-10% this year. And I think next year that it's going to continue to do well. Peter and I were saying on the last podcast, I think we're at the beginnings of a commodity super cycle. I think we're going to see commodity prices much longer, much higher for longer over the next couple of years. And I think Ecora has got such a diversity of those commodities, such a breadth of them, I can see cash flow really turning around in the future. And so although the immediate forecast growth isn't great, you can see on the screen we've got shrinking turnover, shrinking earnings per share next year. I think over the long term, this is a company that's going to go from strength to strength. So I'm very happy to hold into 2026. Any thoughts?
Yeah. Just for disclosure, I own Ecora Resources as well. Henry and I did a commodities podcast a good few podcasts ago, and we chose not to talk about it then. We talked about ideas in the podcast two before last. We chose not to talk about it then. But yeah, we both own the stock. I almost think feel like I purchased Ecora to offset not going back into AAZ. And AAZ has still outperformed it since I purchased Ecora. But it's for the diversified portfolio of assets that they've got, which they're getting royalties from, and also the ones that are not even on stream yet. They've got a stake in when they become and come on stream. I think the thing for me regarding Ecora is the fact that the vast different diversified assets that they've got. And what people don't talk about, or will be talking about more so in 2026, is this big battle and continued fight for critical minerals and critical metals. And they've got such an exposure regarding that, regarding all assets and minerals globally on that sort of vein, that I think they could actually do reasonably well, if not super well, next year. But also on the energy side, there's also conversations being had about countries going back to and exploiting uranium. And they've got a significant amount of exposure to uranium. And obviously they've got exposure to gold. But I think depending on what happens with certain countries and the energy resources that they require, and whether they're going to be putting together small modular reactors and whatever, uranium prices could do reasonably well in 2026. So Ecora could equally do well. We will see. I'm happy with the performance since I've purchased it earlier this year. And we'll see what happens. Obviously, with regards to the royalty streams that they've got in, it doesn't take a lot regarding oil prices going down, continue down, and for commodity prices to go up, for their returns to be significantly enhanced, and therefore the royalty percentage that they get incrementally goes up again a notch. Yeah, interesting co. It's one of those royalty companies that it's a tiddler, you know, market cap, what does he say, 276, 200, sub 280, so it's not that massive. Tiny little yield of 1%, and as I keep saying on the pod, it's not all about the yield. You want the capital returns on the pod, on the stock. So it's gone up 70% year to date. It's had a really bad 2023, 24, finally getting the bounce back. If it does anything that it could potentially do over the course of 2026, it should be a £1.30 to £1.50 stock. You know, so you're looking at another 20% easily compounded, which it hasn't done over the past 5 years. So could it be that it's returned to compounding significantly? Fingers crossed. Any thoughts, anybody?
Done them into silence with my genius.
Right, we've got Andy. Andy, what do you want to say about BlackRock World Mining Trust as an alternative?
Yeah,
it's done better year to date, or there or thereabouts. Similar.
Just around that thought process is when you looked at that this stock, Peter and Henry, did you consider that as an alternative that's maybe a bit more kind of diversified, or did that even land on your?
Yeah, no, I did. I really like it. I think I've been on record before saying this is one of my favourite sort of funds in the sector. With mining, with these large mining businesses, I mean, I've gone for Rio Tinto. The baskets of resources that these big mining companies have got are all slightly different. The reason I plumped for Ecora was this sort of broad green exposure that they've got. Whereas the impression I had of BlackRock World Mining, and I might be incorrect in this, but I felt it was more industrial metals than it was sort of rare earths, copper, tungsten, electronics-based commodities. So it was a slightly different focus. But I am a big fan of BlackRock World Mining. And I think for people that want mining exposure, it's a very good low-cost way to get it. And I
Matt, you
think,
wanted to say
Matt,
something to
we all,
do regarding
sorry, go on.
this? So carry on.
Yeah, I was going to say, kind of echoing Henry about commodities super cycle. There's a lot of various tailwinds that are flowing around, and obviously there's some which I know you've put a post out. We did a post recently about copper and that being re-rated long term. Obviously the big news is everything's all around the rare earth metals. So if you can remember the names of them, that is how you win Scrabble on Christmas Day.
Good point.
So there's a lot of like news around there, and obviously China is the current basically controls the world's supply of that, which is ironic because the one thing rare earths aren't is rare. One of the things that Henry touched on, and I also own Rio Tinto as well, is I think that a lot of the boring industrial metals are being very heavily overlooked at the moment, because we've spoken about in the previous show about the rollout of green tech, and one of the biggest problems being things like the fact that the grid infrastructure isn't there. And you just mentioned about uranium and small modular reactors, and both of those, one of the things that is not spoken about much is steel production. I was reading an article on the International Energy Agency, and they think that steel consumption is going to go up by like 20% or something, purely because of the green transition. Because obviously the simplest thing is kind of like the steel demand for pylons for grid rollout. I mean, nuclear reactors are extremely steel intensive. Wind turbines is basically a windmill on top of a very, very big steel pole. And even the actual blades, then you start getting into bauxite and uses of aluminium. Obviously, EVs are using aluminium rather than steel to offset the weight of lithium batteries. Although lithium is an interesting one, because I think lithium is overdone with grid storage, because lithium is good for things that move. Actually, sodium batteries are better for grid storage because they're cheaper to build and they're less prone to bursting into flames, which is a useful thing you want. But also because they aren't required to move, they can be really, really heavy, because not moving is a real thing you want. It's a desirable desirable feature in your grid-based storage batteries. And they also have the right, I think, the way that sodium works, it has a better chemistry for grid-based storage, in the way that it charges up and that sort of thing. So I'm not a chemical engineer, although I have read bits and pieces around that. But yeah, so there's a lot of boring stuff that's actually could become useful and could start going up in price more than I think people are expecting, because like obviously steel is China, is what most people view it as.
No, excellent points, well made, mate. And I think you're spot on regarding the steel production, which could mean, as you say, Rio Tinto actually does better than some of the most specialist rare earths and critical minerals and metals stocks. So we'll see. I'm conscious of the time, gents, and it's now 10 o'clock on a Tuesday evening, and I'm conscious that Paul is essentially still at work by the looks of it. So we're going to go and just spend a very quick few minutes, Henry, on one more, and then we're going to conclude.
I'm going to do two in one here, right? This is going to be the fastest coverage you've ever heard.
So, right, okay. Let's see how quick it is, because I can see our soon-to-be secondary school teacher, headmaster, Paul, nodding off, and he's not going to fall asleep on his drums. Make it quick.
So two, we've got Concurrent Technologies, the ticker's CNC. Tech manufacturing business based in the UK. It's up 61% in 2025. They've had terrific momentum in their contracted orders over the last 2 years, and the share price has responded accordingly. They've got terrific commercial traction. They've had so many orders in the door, they've had to put the staff on overtime, and they still couldn't keep up. Now, that ability to turn project wins into sustainable revenue and margin expansion are going to be critical next year. I want to see that coming through for the business. People are expecting it. If they deliver it, I think this share will continue to do very well. It's a very small business, very, very small. The market cap, which Paul has kindly pulled up for me, is only 192. It's not even 200 million. And it was considerably smaller a couple of years ago. So I think this has got quite a long way still to run. The second business I'm going to talk about, which I think
can I
might
quickly
do
say
well.
Something about CNC, Paul?
You said be quick,
Henry. I said quick. I'm just going to say something because it reiterates what Lewis was saying earlier. One of the first stocks that I ever bought was Concurrent Technology back in the 90s, mate.
Back in the
90s. Yes, all the way back there. Guess when I sold it?
Go on.
Back in the 90s. So look at that now. And I've looked at it and looked at it. I've gone, nah, ain't going to buy it now. It's like five times more than when I bought it. Ain't going to buy it now. Ain't going to buy it. And it's just gone.
1,200%.
And just carried on. Yeah. That was back in the days when I was like, almost like a trader, mate, like in, out. And I look back and I go, and this is why sometimes I have so many disagreements with traders, because they're going in for 3% and 5%. And I'm going, how many trades do you need to, on that one now, what's that? 1,300% in the last, 30 years almost, yeah? How many 3% and 5% do you need to get 1,300%?
Yep.
Anyway, sorry, I interject. Phenomenal. Please press on, mate. Carry on, sorry.
I mean, that's a very valid point. Again, I occasionally get that thrown at me about the difference between trading and investing and when you take profits and when you don't. And only this week I was having a disagreement with somebody that said, well, as an investor, you don't make any money at all because it's all theoretical till you take it back out the market.
Bad point.
And I said, well, arguably you've got a point there, but I'll still stack my returns up against yours over 10 years. So... I don't know. Maybe I didn't win any friends there, but I felt like I came out with the moral high ground. So the final company I'm gonna mention is another one I own. So again, take with a pinch of salt. It is a bank, and I think banks have done well. They have done terrifically well this year. If you own Lloyds, Barclays, NatWest, they've all shot through the roof. I think next year they've got more potential still in them. The business is Secure Trust Bank. It is a very small, very, very specialist company, which is up 180% in 2025. Now, I think the outlook for the business is positive, but it is very, very valuation sensitive. Their strong performance sort of reflects the recovery in UK retail finance, their dividend growth, and strong analyst coverage. You know, this has solidly been a strong buy for as long as I've invested in it. But future performance, as with anything, or as with any bank particularly, it's going to hinge on macroeconomic performance. And only 2 weeks ago, I was getting a kicking from some random member of the audience for daring to say that the future in the UK might not be doom and gloom. And if it is doom and gloom, if it's all disaster, guys, Secure Trust Bank is going to struggle. Now, analysts are expecting sort of modest dividend growth next year after a strong couple of years. But I think if it continues to perform, if it continues to execute, there's a few ifs in there. But if the stars align, I think this will be another one that does well in 2026.
Okay, quick question, Henry. What was the catalyst at the start of this year for it to go up 180%? What's
Well,
happened
you
to
may
it?
have heard about the vehicle financing scandal.
Ah, so it crashed in
It
24 because of that,
got
and then they
covered
got
with that.
reprieved. The
Exactly.
reprieve, wow.
So it just shows you how much fear there was about this axe
A
hanging over
lot
the
of fear,
sector.
yeah.
The government's going to go after these vehicle financing firms. They're going to
Yep.
absolutely destroy the sector. It will be a disaster. And of course, the government sort of saw light and went, it's not really much to be gained by trolleying the finance sector. We'll
Okay.
back off a little bit.
Yeah, I think the lesson learned there for me and for anyone listening is that if something comes out to say this sector is going to be absolutely trashed, have a look at the victims when they crash that day regarding something happening regarding the sector. And the minute there's a whiff of they're getting a reprieve, start to go back in regarding it. I think I mentioned a while back, Henry, I mean, I did a similar thing with CVS. And pet and the net I'm struggling now, it's 10 o'clock. Pets at home. Yeah, when they got absolutely smashed, I went for the CV, CVS group, and they've recovered now, but I'm conscious now that they've almost accelerated too far ahead of where they should be. And I'm wondering whether that might be the case with Secure Trust, in a sense of you look at that now, they're almost back at a 4 year, heading towards a 3 year high-ish, possibly
Yeah.
4 year.
I mean, I
Have
think
they?
personally, I think this is very undervalued. I mean,
Okay, okay.
brokers have got a target price of 18.5 pounds on it, and it's currently sat at 10. I think that's a little bit topsy for a bank. I think that'd be a little bit pricey for this. There is some risk in the loan book. It's not all super high quality loans that they're making. And it is a specialist bank, so you're always going to have some sort of a discount to NAV. But it's at a 50% discount to NAV. That seems a little bit steep. So I think, personally, I've got a price target of sort of somewhere between 12 and £15 on this, which I'd like to see it get to. Whether it gets there or not, I'm not sure, but I think it's got the potential.
Okie dokie. No, okay, cool. And I'm conscious of the time, so we're gonna call that, ladies and gents. We've had some interesting stocks. I want to give a big thank you to Andrew at Spenno006. I want to give a big thank you to Matthew, the Games Workshop, Gregory, Paul, Ian and Brown. Thank you ever so much, sir. Fantastic, Paul Hall, for staying with us through thick and thin for the last what is now 4 hours. Was meant to be 2 hours. And of course, my fantastic co-host, Henry Viola Hare, for this very first pod of 2026 that you, ladies and gents, are listening to. We hope you've enjoyed it. We'd love to hear your feedback. We'd love to hear your interactions and what you liked and disliked. We'd love to hear about your stocks as well. What stocks do you like and have got good vibes about for 2026? Let us know. And please come on X and other places and tell us how badly we've chosen the stocks that we think, or especially me, have picked for 2026. And let's hear your feedback. Big thank you, Paul and Paulie, Matthew, Andy, Henry. Welcome to 2026, everybody. And this has been the first pod of the year, number pod 170. We look forward to seeing you again in 2 weeks' time after you've heard this particular pod. And take care. Have a fantastic 2026. Hope your portfolios did absolutely brilliantly and continued good health into 2026. That's a wrap for podcast 170. Goodbye. Take care. God bless.
Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit shareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.